Now, he's not saying don't share the gospel with them. That's the previous principles, you see. But he's offering some flexibility as we proclaim and live the gospel with these people, with poor. With the poor is how he refers to them. And then he draws two conclusions, theological and practical. They go together theologically. The resurrection shows us that God not only created both body and spirit, but will also redeem both body and spirit. See, this goes contrary to the Gnostic idea that it's just that it's just the soul, it's just the immaterial. The salvation Jesus will eventually bring in its fullness will include liberation from all the effects of sin, not only spiritual, but physical and material as well. Jesus came both preaching the word and healing and feeding. They also go together practically. We must be ever wary of collapsing evangelism into deeds, a deed ministry, as the social gospel did, but loving deeds are an irreplaceable witness to the power and nature of God's grace, an irreplaceable testimony to the truth of the gospel. I think that's helpful. Has it solved all the issues? No, we have to talk still. But I think this gives us at least, and read the article. Was it in there? Yeah, there it is. I would encourage you to read the article. I think you'd find it very instructive, very helpful. It's not definitive. It's not the final word, but it's at least an entree into this discussion that I think of which we need to be a part. Are you finding this at Moody? Are you finding deeds ministries or deeds of mercy ministries prominent, prevalent, growing amongst you?
Extremely prevalent.
Yeah, yeah, and you know it's true. It's true across all of our campuses. It's true in most of our churches with our young people as well.
It's a requirement in a lot of Christian schools to graduate now that you must do service.
Some service ministry, yeah. So what I'm saying is, okay. How do we move beyond it's a requirement so we can check it off to doing it with the right motive and understanding the right biblical framework with which we do it? Yeah.
Just, you know, looking at what's happening right now in our country, in the next 12 to 24 months, this is going to become a huge issue. Huge. And so it needs to be something that we ask God to help us as pastors to apply in new and special ways.
Yeah. I would agree. Yes.
I believe the new president wants to pass the faith-based giving money, federal money to faith-based organizations as long as they don't pass the tax.
Right. And it's not happened yet, but it's being talked about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, sometimes I say there's enough work to do where we're going to preach the gospel and we're going to help the poor as well. How do you work in work doing these deeds of mercy to the glory of God even before preaching the gospel? I mean, we preach the gospel for the glory of God, but sometimes you help people and you're like, I've already told them the gospel and now they still need my help. Mm-hmm. They're not responding. Mm-hmm. I don't want to treat them as a project, but there's other people that I still got to get the gospel to.
Yeah.
And I'm helping them because I'm giving God glory as well.
Yeah. They are fellow image bearers, and that alone gives them dignity. They may be image bearers on their way to hell, but it doesn't deny the dignity that they have. As an example of that, I don't know if anyone knows Henry Nouwen's name. Henry Nouwen, Roman Catholic, and excuse me? Yeah, well, he wrote a number of things, and he left a prestigious post, as I recall, it was at Harvard, and he went to work at L'Arche, French word, and this community was a community of those that couldn't care for themselves; they were that debilitated, mentally and primarily mentally, and what would the purpose be for caring for them? And that would almost be, I don't want to say a worse case, but it would be a, well, it's a different case than what you're talking about. And I think you're right. And I think Henry came to realize that, and again, one of those things where they needed his, they couldn't get out of bed. He would have to carry them out of bed to go to the bathroom, to go to eat, all that sort of stuff. And some wouldn't acknowledge that because of their condition. And so in a manner, they needed him. But he came to realize that he needed them. And so you're exactly right. It's again, it's not a project. It's and we do it. What does Jesus say in Matthew 25? The way you did it to the least of these. And I do think that they do become projects. And there is much that God teaches us. Is it easy? No. But I think you hit on something very important. That let's go back to the early church, and how did Christianity spread? Through the means we're just talking about. Now, it wasn't just doing the deeds of mercy. It was also truth to be embraced, and truth to be believed. Absolutely. But you raise a very good point. A very good point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. In some ways, I mean, this is a kind of ministry that you're engaged with, in a closed country, like my brother, this is the kind of ministry. I mean, this is the ministry that as you know, my brother is a part of. It's a medical ministry. It's primarily rural health care. But don't miss for a moment that they're there to spread the gospel in this place. Someone else had a hand up.
It seems like one of the big challenges is how we do the care and not become just another social agency.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to keep right. That's just plain and simple. It's not. But the answer then is not just to avoid it. See, we don't have the option of just avoiding it or ignoring it. I don't believe we do. Well, this isn't a final statement. It's just something of which we need to be aware, something that's there. And how do we think about it? And how do we shepherd this discussion in a God-honoring way with the gospel at the center? Yes. Yeah, I would say that there's no place for a superior inferior. There's no place for that in what we're talking about. Absolutely none. It's And it's both figurative and literal. It's one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. Mm-hmm. Last one.
Cups of cold water from Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Matthew 25.
Mm-hmm. Matthew 25, and we also see this in John 4, and Christ and his disciples not avoiding the Samaritans.
Not afraid to confront them either.
Not right.
No, you don't have a husband, but there's another problem there. The water of life. Yeah, there are. Well,
we can't beat them all. We can't offer a cup of water.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's like the little kid that threw the starfish back into the ocean. And the pundit that said, "You're not going to save them all." "No, but I saved that one." And we don't save them, but we do what we can. See, an implication to the globalization and the news that we hear from everywhere, it desensitizes us to take care of our neighbor. I mean, frankly, there are those that would rather watch Lost or 24 or... Now, I just know that these exist. I do read. And they would cry over someone that dies in a movie show before they'd even care about their neighbor who is dying from cancer. Is that true? There's a profound problem with that, and it's even true within the church as well. So as Jack talked about the emotional or the relational side, you know, there is something we need to hear about those things. Okay, hang on to your chair. I don't want you to get whiplash, all right? Here we go. The church, emerging, emergent. Sorry for the misspelling. I don't equate these, all right? I don't equate these. I just use it as a continuum is really what I consider it to be. And I would like to just... part of the problem is, so when you talk about emerging, what are you talking about? Are you talking about emerging ecclesiologically? In other words, the church? Are you talking about emerging sociologically? You know, the sociological phenomenon that surrounds it? Are we talking about emerging theologically? In other words, what are the beliefs of what's emerging? Fourth, are we talking about emerging epistemologically? In other words, what is the basis of understanding truth at all? Or are we talking about the politics of those who are emerging? You see, it becomes very, very confusing. And if we just simply throw that word out there, and in our mind we just have one nuance of it, and then we just simply say, "You're emerging." Wow. I mean, do you mean that good or bad? Well, if someone were to do that, they would mean it probably bad. I was at a free church, church of maybe 800 or so, a couple of weeks ago, and they're in the midst of this. They've really brought a new pastor on staff. The previous pastor had been there about 15 years, and you know they're really trying to do some new things, reaching out into the community. Some are reading that as they're emergent, but they're not. They're emerging, but they're not emergent. And I think it's helpful to use some delineations that I think we need to be careful of. We need to know the nuances because you're going to try to help people to understand their way through the labyrinth that really is hard to find the end. It's hard to find your way through the maze. And if we're not careful enough, we compound the confusion. This I found helpful. And you know what? The problem is, what emerging and emergent was in 2006, it isn't today. We had a midwinter ministerial on this very issue. Ed Stetzer spoke 2008. It's not what he presented then any longer either. It's fluid. Is that right, Stu? It's fluid. I found what Ed Stetzer did, and it's been used in a number of different places, helpful. He refers to relevance, and I would say that would be more emerging. A Reconstructionist would be more emerging or emergent, and the revisionists would be considered emergent. Don't get caught up in the titles. He just coined some terms, but it's helpful. Here's how he defined them. Relevance. These would be emerging. There are a good number of young and not so young leaders who some classify as emerging that really are just trying to make their worship, music, and outreach more contextual to emerging culture. Ironically, while some may consider them liberal, they are often deeply committed to biblical preaching, male pastoral leadership, and other values common in conservative evangelical churches. They are simply trying to explain the message of Christ in a way their generation can understand. They are instead intentionally reaching into their communities, which are different than where most Southern Baptists live. Ed Stetzer is Southern Baptist. He's part of the SBC. And proclaiming a faithful, biblically centered gospel there. I know some of their churches. They are doctrinally sound, growing, and impacting lostness. That is how Ed and many others have affirmed, even those in the emergent, this is helpful. These are the relevance. The Reconstructionists think that the current form of church is frequently irrelevant and the structure is unhelpful. Yet, they typically hold to a more orthodox view of the gospel and scripture. Therefore, we see an increase in models of church that reject certain organizational models, embracing what are often called incarnational or house models. Here you would go more towards organic church or things like that, okay? And that's what would happen here. By the way, does anyone know the name Mark Driscoll? Well, Mark Driscoll is irrelevant. Mark Driscoll is emerging. But if you've heard Mark Driscoll preach, don't think that he wavers or waffles on doctrine. Again, there are a number of people here. Revisionists. This is what he would refer to as emergent. Revisionists are questioning and in some cases denying issues like the nature of the substitutionary atonement, the reality of hell, the complementarian nature of gender, and the nature of the gospel itself. This is not new. Some mainline theologians quietly abandoned these doctrines a generation ago. The revisionist emerging church leaders should be treated, appreciated, and read as we read mainline theologians. They often have good descriptions, but their prescriptions fail to take into account the full teaching of the Word of God. The difficulty was, in part of the discussion, see, this discussion gets into the gray, remember in my diagram early on? This discussion is the gray that was in that grid. And I think, over time, it's become clearer, and this was stated in 2006, it's become clearer that those that are emergent, they are more liberal in their understandings of biblical truth, or doctrines, or theology. It doesn't necessarily make them bad. It just it's their theological position. I don't agree with it at all. And I do think it's the liberal position. But what the difficulty was is the discussion was happening within the evangelical camp. Some of the parameters. Let me just say this. These diagrams or grids were done by C. Michael Patton in his writing, Would the Real Emerger Please Stand Up? Patton does some very good writing. I appreciate much of what he does. He's, as I mentioned yesterday, a Dallas grad, and he blogs often. But here's, I did have to do a disclaimer. I'm just telling you. Diagrams or grids or labels can sometimes hinder meaningful dialogue. That is not my intent. Honestly, they can also be helpful in giving us ways of thinking about various movements or groups, including ourselves. My purpose for including them is to foster and nourish humble dialogue and discussion, ultimately for the sake of truth, Jesus Christ. Because it is very easy for us, when we hear someone that differs from us, or some part of that differs from us, it's very easy for us to classify it, and if we can classify it, we can deny it, and then we don't even have to deal with what they're saying. I don't want to do that. I don't want to prematurely jump to those prejudged conclusions and not hear what needs to be heard. But neither do I want to just simply free for all either. At some point, we need to be able to help God's people to think about these things in some way. And so, using Michael Patton's diagrams, notice he started with fundamentalism on the far left and ends up with liberal on the far right. And then he the fundamentalism and evangelical, and then it moves to emerging, and then it moves to emergent, and then it moves to liberal. On the bottom, it's just conservative liberal. He then did put in some names. Now, he put D.A. Carson in the middle, not because D.A. Carson is the definition of evangelicalism. That's not the purpose. He's just using it as a heuristic or as a teaching device to help us to understand some of where people might be theologically anyway. And so you can see that he would put John MacArthur in a little bit on the left towards the fundamentalist side. Now, that doesn't say... It doesn't say anyone up here is bad, where they're bad, they're evil, they're mean, that sort of thing. Don't hear that. But it is an attempt to at least put some helpful structure in how we can talk about these things. Notice he in the emerging would put Dan Kimball, Scott McKnight, Erwin McManus, N.T. Wright, Donald Miller. He puts Mark Driscoll between evangelicalism emerging. And you know what? I will quibble with some of what he's saying too. You will too. But at least it's helpful to say, okay, in light of these different descriptions that Ed Stetzer gave us, is there something that can help us? And then he puts Brian McLaren, you know, between emerging, emergent, and then on the emergent side, he puts Doug Padgett, Tony Jones, and Spencer Burke. Just so you know, about 2 years ago, Spencer Burke wrote a book entitled The Heretic's Guide to Eternity. And sadly, I think he wrote it for himself. Because even Scott McKnight would conclude, and you see where Scott is, Scott McKnight has concluded that Spencer's teaching on the Trinity is heretical. So that's kind of, I think, helpful to understand when we read or when we hear or when we this discussion. And it's also in some ways connected back to this discussion of the gospel and the culture and the church and how do we engage and do we or don't we? Well, just so you know, that was done about a year ago, and it's even changed now even more so today. And again, the second coming of emergers from Michael, notice he's kind of traced it, 95 to 2003, 2003, 2006, 2006, 2008, and then associations vanish, new designations emerge. On the left side, emergent, and he refers to them as neoliberal. He's got Brian McLaren, Tony Jones. Doug Padgett would be a part of that too. Now, how can you say that? Because they've written books. They've written volumes of books, and you can draw some conclusions based upon things that they've written, right? Now, yes, be charitable. Read them with a hermeneutic of love, not a hermeneutic of suspicion. But this is where they now are. In fact, the Emergent Village. Does anyone know about the Emergent Village? That was the coalition or the village in which the discussion emergent discussion was taking place. And Tony Jones was the director of that. They've now concluded that that's too structural, it's too much organization, and it's really, that's not what they want, so he no longer serves in that capacity. It's really a grassroots kind of a movement. But what I found very interesting, that it was about a month after he stepped away from that position that he came out in favor of ordaining same-sex marriage and homosexuals. And when you begin to make statements like that, all of a sudden the theological issues are made pretty clear. And it's what some people had been thinking before, charitably, but thinking that, you know, this is really liberalism. Understanding of Scripture, understanding of some of the key issues, and that's then why there's now a new, kind of a new direction. And being able to say that Brian McLaren and Tony Jones and Doug Padgett and others, but they're really neoliberal. And there's a new alliance that's been formed. Scott McKnight and Dan Kimball are two of them, and that's why this grid is as it is. They haven't named it yet, but here it is. They share an urgency about the mission of Jesus and evangelism. And here is how it is further described. Friends, pioneers, innovators, and catalysts who want to dream and work for the gospel together rather than alone. This is the new alliance now. This is a new alliance that's being led by Scott McKnight and Dan Kimball. Different from the emergent in which, again, they've become neoliberal. Many other things could be said about that, but I'm keeping an eye on the clock. Secondly, leaders, entrepreneurs, pastors, misfits, and artists who share a high view of Scripture and a radical commitment to evangelism while being faithfully committed to what is expressed in the Lausanne Covenant. I'm going to come back to that. Third, missionally minded people from different backgrounds who use different methods in different cultural contexts but share the same experimental passion and risk-taking heart for serving, loving, and helping people connect to God through Jesus. This, by the way, is an email that I cut and pasted into the PowerPoint that I sent to our president, Bill Hamill. Just keeping him informed of some of these things. And then my comment to Bill was, what is going to unite this new alliance is the Lausanne Covenant, which consists of a strongly worded statement of the Bible and a strong commitment to the exclusive claims of Jesus Christ and evangelism, among other pertinent doctrinal matters. I think that's a good... I don't know what it's going to end up, but I think having this Lausanne Covenant is a good move. Remember, I mentioned that yesterday. I think, Jim, it was in our discussion. And in the emergent discussion, they never wanted to say anything about what they believed definitively, because it was always a conversation. And most doctrines were speculation. You know, let's talk about them. Let's think about them all over again. And frankly, nobody gets to a place in a vacuum. We all have history. So we'll have to see. But the fact that they're going to use the covenant, I think, is a positive thing. I don't know. It's premature to say anything else besides that. So was that helpful, at least to explain just a little bit? Maybe you all already knew everything about this, but I trust that at least this part on the emergent discussion was helpful. You know, there's a last one I'm not going to do, but I'll show you what it was. It was the prosperity gospel. I'll do one quote. Can I do that? Early Word of Faith leaders and the contemporary Word of Faith leaders. Here it is. It comes, let me show you where it's from. It comes from Robert Bowman, The Word Faith Controversy, Understanding the Health and Wealth Gospel. By the way, there is one positive about the Word Faith. That is, you know what? They believe God can do miraculous things. So is there anything we can learn from them? Yeah. Now, there's some problems too. But here, I found this helpful. And I honestly will end on this, Matt, I promise. At least some of the leading teachers of the movement do teach heresy, but the movement as a whole should be classified as aberrant or sub-orthodox. There are a number of doctrinal reasons for this conclusion. First, Word of Faith teachers do not explicitly reject orthodox doctrine. Second, they sometimes affirm orthodox doctrine. All right, that's two sides of the same coin. I will just add this. Many of them... have had no formal Bible training. Now, is that bad? No, not necessarily. But with no formal Bible training with very little accountability, that can be a recipe for some bad things. Third, the movement belongs to a radical wind of an Orthodox Christian tradition, namely Pentecostalism. Fourth, the movement teaches patently on biblical ideas about the nature of God, the nature of human beings, and the person and redemptive work of Jesus Christ. Fifth, some Word of Faith teachers have espoused blatantly heretical and even blasphemous ideas. And last, Word of Faith teaching is demonstrably detrimental to a sound Christian life. Now, notice, clarify or qualify these statements with, some of what he has said here. I think that's critical as well. Doug Moo said something very similar in an article earlier. Well, I could go on ad nauseum, and I'm sorry for that, but thank you so much for the privilege of being here with you.
Well, are your brains full? And your heart warmed? Good. Let's stay sharp this coming year. Thank you, Greg, for being with us. Thank you all for coming. Next year's theme tentatively is the Old Testament, the Gospel and the Old Testament, and our understanding of the Old Testament, our teaching it, and our applying it to our lives. So be thinking about that as we get ready for next year. The slides, the team here at Waterdam is just amazing. The slides from Greg's talks are already online. It'll be done before you get to your car. The recordings are already up. I want to thank especially Peter and Sherry for your work on that, and Jared. Thank you for doing that. I understand a couple of you. Thank you. She says, oh, go on. She means, yeah, go on. And I understand they took off work for this, so thank you especially for being with us. Waterdam.org. There's also links. We've tried to keep up with if he gives us an online resource, putting those up there too. Okay, listen up. Yes, Jared.
Just real quick. There's a link under the announcements. Go to the page where you can go to waterdam.org/staysharp09.
Staysharp09 at waterdam.org. I talked with Aaron about the Next Step book table. He says he doesn't want us to ship any of those books back, so he has
cut them more.
Ooh. So the books that are
discounts from those that bought already.
No. Nice try. This is for the books that are left over on the table, half off retail. So Faith Comes by Hearing, $11.50. Exegetical Fallacies, $8. Call to Spiritual Reformation, $9.50. Joe, don't you go to be first at the table. No. New Testament Commentary Survey for $5. Vintage Jesus $10. Interpreting the New Testament Text $15. All the Free Church resources are half off. Peacemaker $8.50. If you're a church planter, you may be excused to go back and look at that table first. And the rest of you, go with God.